We are in the book of Revelation, chapter 20, where the millennium is cited, the thousand-year reign of Jesus Christ and his resurrected and transformed saints from all the different ages of earth's history. We're in a new heaven, a new earth in which righteousness dwells. And there's not tons of detail about life during that millennial period. Not here in Revelation 20. So what I've done is I have gone back to at least a few of the passages of the Old Testament that give some of the thoughts of what life is going to be like there. And I'm trying to share those with you right now. If you'd like to look over them again for yourself, they're in the Living in the Last Days Prophecy Seminar Notes, which is in the PDF resources of the intotheword.net website. We are looking today at the book of Jeremiah, which was written during the 6th century BC. That's the 500s. We were looking first at ones that came from the 8th century BC, which were written during the 700s, right before northern Israel went into Assyrian exile because of their sin. Well, Jeremiah is writing in the 500s, right before Judah goes into Babylonian exile because of their sin. So it's the same sort of setup here, that we've got judgment passages, passages about sin, but mixed in amongst them are promises about God resolving the sin problem and eventually bringing the saved people back into his eternal presence, which we would talk about as being the millennium. So the first section that I want us to kind of sample today is Jeremiah chapter 30, starting at verse number 18. Thus says he who is, behold, I will, future tense, I will restore the fortunes of the tents of Jacob, that's the Israeli people, ethnic Israelis, and have compassion on his dwellings. The city shall be rebuilt on its mound, and the palace shall stand where it used to be. That seems to be a reference to Jerusalem. And so there's a little bit here about the return from Babylonian exile and the rebuilding of the city of Jerusalem, getting prepared for the first coming of Jesus. And I've warned you that sometimes these passages have a mixture of prophecies about the first coming of Jesus right next to prophecies about his second coming, which is one of the reasons the people living in the first century were so excited about the prospect of Jesus being Messiah, because they were pretty sure that they were about to go into the new heaven, the new earth, have a new body, the curse would be gone, sin would be gone, blessings would be the norm, and all of that. What they didn't understand is that there's a separation between two comings of the Messiah. The first one, he dealt with individual sin. The next one, the next coming of Jesus, will deal with the curse that's on the world, the fallen world, and he'll give us a new world and new bodies. Now back to the text. Verse 19. Out of them shall come songs of thanksgiving and the voices of those who celebrate. So we've got happiness again, just like our last session we were talking about. I will multiply them and they shall not be few. I will make them honored. They will not be small. So we're talking about lots and lots of people. Their children shall be as they were of old, and their congregation shall be established before me, and I will punish all those who oppress him. Their prince shall be one of themselves. I think that might actually be a messianic prophecy there. Their ruler shall come out from their midst. I will make him draw near, and he shall approach me, for who would dare of himself to approach me declares he who is? And of course, the answer is Jesus, who is God, made man, lays down his life, which gives him then the ability to approach God as the mediator between God and man, because he is the Savior. And so that's, I think, all kind of rolled up here in some of the theology. But look at verse number 22. We've seen this in other millennial-style passages. You shall be my people, and I will be your God. So there is this promise that things will be patched up, that God will live in the presence of his people, and that separation's never going to happen again because of sin. Verse 2 of the next chapter, chapter 31, thus says he who is, the people who survived the sword found grace in the wilderness. When Israel sought for rest, he who is appeared to him from far away. So here comes Jesus from far away and gives them rest. When Israel sought for rest, he who is appeared to him from far away. I've loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. Again, I will build you, and you will be built, O virgin Israel. Again, you will adorn yourself with tambourines and will go forth in the dance of the merrymakers. Again, you'll plant vineyards on the mountains of Samaria. The planters shall plant and shall enjoy the fruit. So we've seen again this idea of a restored, prosperous agriculture in a new earth. And there shall be a day when the watchman will call in the hill country of Ephraim, arise, let us go up to Zion to he who is our God. Now that doesn't make as much to us as it would be the people that first read this, because Ephraim belonged to the fallen nation of northern Israel. And so the idea that somebody would give the signal, hey, everybody, it's time for us all to go to Jerusalem to worship, that has to be future. That has to be a time when the land, the promised land, is occupied north to south, east to west by people that want to have this relationship with God. For thus says he who is, sing aloud with gladness for Jacob and raise shouts for the chief of the nations. Proclaim, give praise and say, oh, he who is, save your people, the remnant of Israel. Behold, I will bring them from the north country and gather them from the farthest parts of the earth. Among them, the blind, the lame, the pregnant woman, she who is in labor together, a great company, they shall return here. With weeping, they shall come. With pleas of mercy, I will lead them back. I'll make them walk by brooks of water in a straight path in which they shall not stumble. For I am father to Israel. Ephraim is my firstborn. So there is, again, this hint that in the midst of judgment over sin, there will be a time of repentance and this reconciliation between God and former sinners. Particularly, we're focused on the ethnic Israelis, but remember, all of us who are Gentiles have been grafted in to this tree of Israel, into this vine that was chosen by the Lord. And so we will also be part of this group that's gathered in and will be celebrating. Hear the word of he who is, O nations, declared in the coastlands far away, say, he who scattered Israel will gather him and will keep him as a shepherd keeps his flock. For he who is has ransomed Jacob and has redeemed him from hands too strong for him. They shall come and sing aloud on the heights height of Zion. They shall be radiant over the goodness of he who is, over the grain, the wine, the oil, the young of the flock and the herd. Their life shall be like a watered garden, and they shall languish no more. Again, there is some of these elements that sound like they could be applied to the return from Assyrian and Babylonian exile. For the people of Israel, the ethnic Israelis to come back into the promised land and get ready for the first coming of the Messiah. I grant you that that is a possible application here. But the fact is that eventually there will be a gathering together from which no scattering will happen again. And that is what we refer to as the millennial period that follows the second coming of Jesus. And it will have the celebration such as this. Then shall the young women rejoice in the dance, and the young men and the old shall be merry. I will turn their mourning, you know, mourning over sin and disease and death and disaster and all of that. I will turn their mourning into joy. I will comfort them and give them gladness for sorrow. I will feast the soul of the priests with abundance, and my people shall be satisfied with my goodness, declares he who is. And so this gathering together is something to be looked forward to. Jeremiah, after talking about the new covenant in the next section of chapter 31, eventually we get to chapter 32, and in verse 36, we have some wording that we've seen before, and so I want to repeat it again. Now therefore, thus says he who is, Jeremiah 32, 36. Thus says he who is the God of Israel concerning this city, meaning Jerusalem, of which you said, it's given into the hand of the king of Babylon by sword, by famine, and by pestilence. So Jeremiah was the prophet of the destruction of Jerusalem in the 6th century B.C. And so that was the bad news. It was because of sin that Israel, southern Judah, was going to lose their capital city. They were going to lose their temple, and they were going to lose their land and go into exile. But with that came a prophecy of restitution and reconciliation and being put back in the land. Verse 37, behold, I will gather them from all the countries to which I drove them in my anger and my wrath and in great indignation. I will bring them back to this place, and I will make them dwell in safety. They shall be my people, and I will be their God. We've seen that phrase several times in the context of millennial passages. I will give them one heart and one way that they may fear me forever. I focus on that phrasing because we know that when they did come back from the Assyrian and the Babylonian exiles and they reestablished themselves in the land and Jerusalem was rebuilt, the temple was rebuilt, that they once again got themselves in trouble over rejecting the Messiah. And they lose the land, they lose the temple, they lose their ability to stay in this promised land. And so they end up being in fear because they don't fear, if you catch my drift, my play on words there. Because they don't respect God, they don't have the ability to dwell in safety until we come to the second coming of Jesus. And all of those will be gathered to the promised land, because remember, the last trump, they'll be resurrected, transformed, caught up together to meet the Lord in the air, and thus they'll always be with him. So they'll be drawn to Jesus in the Middle East. Those folks will enter into the millennial period, and they will dwell in safety, and they will not, and they will fear God forever, and never fear being kicked out again. For their own good and the good of their children after them. That's why God is going to do this. I will make with them an everlasting covenant, and that I will not turn away from doing good to them. And I'll put the fear of me in their hearts, and they will not turn from me. I will rejoice in doing them good, and I will plant them in this land of faithfulness, with all my heart and all my soul. So God makes a promise, a prediction, a prophecy that there is a time coming when the people that he draws to himself, that he brings into the promised land, that they will live forever in peace and security and prosperity and never be afraid again. We've got some of that in the next chapter as well. In verse number 7, I'll restore the fortunes of Judah and the fortunes of Israel and rebuild them as they were at first. I'll cleanse them from all the guilt of their sin against me, and I will forgive all the guilt of their sin and rebellion against me. And this city, which is a reference to Jerusalem, shall be to me a name of joy, of praise, and glory before all the nations of the earth, who shall hear of all the good that I do for them. And they shall fear and tremble because of all the good and all the prosperity I provide for them. Now, I find that section right there particularly intriguing, because eventually we're going to get to the book of Zechariah, and we're going to talk about how in the millennial period, all of these mortals are expected to come to Jerusalem every single year for the Feast of Tabernacles to offer worship to Jesus as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And so in these millennial passages, we have even Gentiles coming to the Lord at Jerusalem. Jeremiah 34, 14. Behold, the days are coming, declares he who is, when I will fulfill the promise I made to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. What is that promise? It's the promise of the branch, the promise of the Messiah, the promise of the seed of woman that will crush the serpent's head, all of those sorts of things. So God says through Jeremiah, it's coming, me fulfilling my word. Verse 15, in those days and at that time, I will cause a righteous branch to spring up for David, and he will execute justice and righteousness in the land. Now that, of course, is Jesus. And he died for our sins the first time he was here. The second time he comes, he will come to rule and reign with justice and righteousness as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And so that is cited right here. In those days, Judah will be saved. Jerusalem will dwell securely, so there will be peace and prosperity in the land. And this is the name by which it will be called Yahweh Tzidku, or He who is our righteousness. Then we have some prophecies about how he will sit on the throne. Thus says he who is, David shall never lack a man to sit on the throne of the house of Israel, because Jesus is that eternal king. The Levitical priest shall never lack a man in my presence to burn offerings, to burn grain offerings and to make sacrifices forever, which is interesting because, of course, Jesus stepped into the role of the final priest who gave himself up as the atoning sacrifice for sin. He gave of his own blood, and so that is why he is a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, which, of course, supersedes the Levitical priesthood. Verse number 19. The word of he who is came to Jeremiah. Thus says he who is, if you break my covenant with the day and my covenant with the night, so that day and night will not come at their appointed time, which is not going to happen, then also my covenant with David, my servant, may be broken, so that he shall not have a son to reign on his throne, and my covenant with the Levitical priests, my ministers. As the host of heaven cannot be numbered, and the sands of the sea cannot be measured, So I will multiply the offspring of David, my servant, and the Levitical priests who minister to me. Now, that is more important for logistical reasons to the readers of Jeremiah, because they're being told that the capital city and the palaces and the temple, all of those are going to be destroyed, and they won't have a king, a Jewish king over them, and they won't have their priests doing all their stuff. They're going to go into Babylonian exile. But the promise was that they would be brought back again, and all that would be able to be restarted after a 70-year period, after a 70-year timeout, and that God would keep his promises to them from there on out, that there would be a permanent king of the line of David. And that, of course, is Jesus. And nothing that the world can do can stop that from happening, as we've kind of been noticing as we've been going through the book of Revelation. Now, in the 6 minutes we have left, we're going to go to the very beginning of an extended prophecy in the book of Ezekiel that some people want to grab a hold of as being very important to the millennial period. And while I'll say some of this final section in the book of Ezekiel certainly contributes to our understanding of the millennial reign, I don't see all of it happening. And here's my reason for believing that. In Ezekiel chapters 40 through, I don't remember what the last chapter is, but to the end of the book, God gives Ezekiel, who is in Babylonian exile, a vision of the sort of temple and the sort of administration and worship that needed to be going on in that temple, and even in the restored kingdom of Israel after the exile, that this was the way they were supposed to do it. And in this passage, there is kind of a conditionality given to it. In Ezekiel chapter 40, verse number 4, the man who is appearing in this vision to Ezekiel said to me, "Son of man, look with your eyes, hear with your ears, and set your heart upon all that I will show you, for you were brought here in order that I might show it to you. Declare all that you see to the house of Israel." So that was his assignment. He needs to repeat his vision to the Israeli people who are in exile. And this is the reason why they needed to hear it. Ezekiel 43:10. Are you ready? Ezekiel 43:10. "As for you, son of man, describe the temple to the house of Israel, that they may be ashamed of their iniquities." So God says, I need you to tell the exiles to look at all of this marvelous planning. And I want it to prick their conscience. I want them to be sorry that they lost the old kingdom, that they lost the old temple, that they were sinners and had to be punished by being removed from the land. So I want you to show them this. Let them measure the plan, the rest of verse number 10 says. If they are ashamed of all they have done, make known to them the design of the house, its structure, its exits, its entrances, all its designs, all its statutes, all its laws, and write it in their sight so that they may observe its whole design and all its statutes and do them. This is the law of the house. This is the law of the house. Its entire area on the top of the mountain all around shall be most holy. Behold, this is the law of the house. So basically, we find out that this whole vision from chapter 40 onward is conditional on the people in exile saying, yeah, we're sorry for what we did. We're sorry for what God has kicked into exile. And now we want to jump on top of making this plan a reality. We're going to take it and we're going to execute it and then we're going to follow it. We're going to do things God's way. And here's the reality of that, folks. While a small remnant, less than 20,000 people, I think, came back from Babylonian exile with Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest, they did not execute this plan. They built a budget temple and built a budget Jerusalem. And God has to send new prophets to get them to do even that budget stuff properly. And so this plan should have happened before Jesus came. But it didn't. Because, again, some of the residual sinful attitude of the people who went into exile. Now, having said that, I will note that there are certain aspects within this section that God himself brings into existence in the millennial period. But don't expect this to be the way things look in the new heaven and new earth. And I'll explain more about that next time we get into the Word.